Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the review of all rights protection mechanisms, RPMs, and all GTLD's PDP working group call held on the 22nd of February, 2017. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call as we have quite a few participants. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. So if you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourselves be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, Phil Corwin. Please begin.
Well, good morning, afternoon, and evening to all our participants, wherever you may be. It's I'm broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia, where it's getting close to midnight. And does anyone have any updates to statements of interest before we get into our substance? Well, hearing none, staff, I think we want to open by soliciting any additional input on categories 3 to 6 of our TMCH questions. Can we put those up? And I apologize, Kathy and I were not on last week's call, chaired by Jay Scott. We were at the non-contracted party house meeting in Reykjavik, Iceland, but we're back now. And let's quickly review these and see if anyone has anything additional to add to these. We'll try to trot through these and then move on to item 3 on the agenda. But looking here in Category 3, the breadth and reach, the scope of the Trademark Clearinghouse Charter, and the question 7, how are design marks currently handled by the clearinghouse provider? Deloitte asked what was meant by design marks, as pointing out they, in their belief, there's no globally consistently accepted definition. There's a reference to the ICANN RPM staff paper 2015, and the working group discussion to date is to follow up with Deloitte on the original sub-team question, especially on validation criteria and how they differentiate, if at all, between design marks, and requesting various examples of accepted and rejected marks. And soliciting Deloitte's view as to whether examples submitted by the working group would have been accepted or rejected. And Rebecca Tushnet, who is on our call right now, apparently is to take the lead in developing examples for submission to Deloitte. So any further comment in regard to design marks? Kathy, please speak up.
Good evening, Phil. Hello, everyone. Kathy Kleiman, and I was reading the chat room from last week, and Martin Silva Valent raised some questions that perhaps should also be part of our discussion. They didn't have to do with Deloitte. I believe his questions, and I wish you were on the call today, I believe his questions had to do with the underlying rules themselves and whether the Trademark Clearinghouse should be accepting design marks, should be accepting figurative marks, what the original rules that should provide the guidelines for the Trademark Clearinghouse say. Because there's certainly a sense that he raised from some of the people who worked on it that it was only word marks, only text marks that were supposed to be accepted. So this idea of going back to the original language, the original recommendations as adopted by the GNSO Council and Board should probably be something the working group does as well. Thanks.
Okay. So, Kathy, I think maybe, I don't have the precise language, maybe staff can add in the working group discussion column a desire to review the originating language for the clearinghouse to see if it addresses design marks, and if so, whether the current practice is consistent with any relevant language. Would that work?
That would work well. Thank you.
Okay. All right. If anyone else, I'm going once, going twice on Design Marks, going three times. We're going to move on to question eight here regarding geographical indicators. How are they and protected destinations of origin and appellations of origin handled by the clearinghouse provider? I have to scroll up to remind myself of what these columns are. Okay, the Deloitte response is the center column. And Deloitte's response was, as of January of this year, no registry operator pursued the option of including marks within the category of, quote, other marks that constitute IP and meet a registry's individual requirements, unquote. And working group discussion is that Deloitte seems to have accepted marks with geographical overtones or elements. This question eight is to be sent to Deloitte asking specifically how these marks are handled, and staff should find out from origin, and I'm not sure what that refers to. Maybe staff can enlighten me. I see Mary's hand up as to who might be able to submit geographic indicators. Mary?
Yes, thanks, Phil, and hello, everybody. This is Mary from staff. So I think the first thing to note, and it's implicit in the follow-up question, is that Deloitte had not been asked specifically about geographical indications or protected designations of origin, and that's why we're going to be sending this specific question to them. In respect of origin, I believe that's a group that represents or deals with folks with geographical indications. One of their staff is actually a member of the working group. We have not had a chance to follow up with him, but we will do so within the next day or so.
Okay. Thanks for enlightening us, Mary, and thanks for, in particular, for pointing out what origin refers to. That's a specific organization involved with validation of geographic marks. Okay. Any other comment on this category, geographical indicators and protected designations and appellations of origin? Greg, go ahead, please.
Thanks, Greg Chatton, for the record. More comment on the working group comment in the far right-hand corner that Deloitte seems to have accepted marks with geographical overtones and elements. Geographical indications and protected designations of origin, appellations of origin, are very specific types of marks, or it's not just the fact that they contain a geographic overtone. There are many marks that could be considered to contain a geographic overtone. So this is, the comment here is much broader than the narrow indicators. So I hope we're not getting off into the weeds on trying to expand from geographical indicators to anything that seems geographical, like Essex. So we, you know, we just have to watch our scope. So, you know, these are, and I don't know, FETA is not a geographical indicator, even if it's a designation of origin. Champagne is both, in any case. So, and I see Heather has a follow-up question here as well.
Yeah, I see Heather's question in the chat.
Does this comment in the right-hand column mean anything to us?
Question in the chat. Yeah, you know, I'm hearing a lot of background noise, and now I'm getting an echo. Someone has their line open. Okay, it seems quieter now. Greg, did you have anything further to say? Greg, are you still with us? All right. Greg's hand just went down. I guess he was done there. And Mary, why don't you chime in, and then I'll get to Kathy.
Sure thing. And hi, everyone. This is Mary again. So just following up from Greg and to Heather's question, this remark was phrased mindful of the discussion that took place on the working group mailing list that there were marks that are in the clearinghouse that have geographical elements, and the view seemed to be there that these were likely to have been taken in and accepted because they are registered trademarks in a particular national or regional jurisdiction, which is one of the criteria for the TMCH. So the thinking here is that unless and until we have a clear response from Deloitte as to whether or not they accept GIs and you know, appellations and designations of origins per se, as opposed to accepting marks with that kind of geographical element, but because they are already registered trademarks, we thought that it would be helpful to get an answer to that question before going further. I hope this helps.
Okay. Thanks, Marion. I can certainly think of many trademarks which have some reference to some geographic map, you know, to some map term as part of the trademark, but that's different than a geographic indicator, as Greg turned out. Kathy, comment here?
Great. Kathy Kleiman. To Mary's point, is it, you know, is that a question that's going to the Trademark Clearinghouse? Is the question, are all of these, are any geographic indicators being accepted required to be trademarks as well, or is there a different qualification standard? So to Deloitte, are they all trademarks? So is it all something people could look up? And then what level of protection is being provided to the geographic indicators? Let's assume they're not trademarks, so that, you know, we have in the U.S. we have two states that have, you know, a lot of references that have associations. So Vermont, say, has cheese, or Wisconsin has fudge. Is it possible that geographic indicators are going in without trademarks? And if so, then what type of protection is being provided them? Does it include Sunrise trademark claims as well as perhaps private protected marks lists? And then I think the next question would be the same one that we just put into number 7, which is, do the rules allow this? You know, separate from Deloitte, you know, what do the rules say about this? And what should we be looking at? What should we be comparing Deloitte's actions against? You know, what were the requirements as set out by the GNSO Council and the board? Thanks.
Okay. And thanks, Kathy. And I'm certainly no expert in geographical indicators, but I'd be surprised. Let's ask the question and find out, but I'd be surprised if a geographic indicator that was not a trademark could pass the verification standards and get into the clearinghouse, but let's find out. Moving on to the next question, which is about trademark plus 50, should it be retained as is, amended, or removed? As everyone would recall, the TM plus 50 was added fairly late in the process in developing the applicant guidebook. It came out of CEO Chahati's straw man proposal, and it's the exception to the rule that to be accepted in the clearinghouse that a mark must be a registered trademark. This is a variation which allows basically a confusingly similar domain to the trademark that's been recovered in a UDRP or in a trademark litigation to be registered in the clearinghouse. So it's an exception to the general rule, and the working group is going to review questions suggested by the registry's stakeholder group. I believe that's supposed to be registry, not registries in the plural, to see if there should be follow-up with Deloitte on this question. I guess this is more of a policy question. I'm not sure what Deloitte can add to it, but certainly they can tell us to what extent TM plus 50 has been used. Kathy, is your hand still up, or is that an old hand?
Sorry, Phil, old hand.
Okay.
I'll take it down.
So, anyone have anything to add on the subject of trademark plus 50? Okay, and hearing none, we will drop down to page 8 of this document. Greg.
I had my hand up.
Greg, I just saw your hand. Go ahead.
Okay.
And someone has their speakers on again. I'm getting echo. Okay, go ahead, Greg.
Okay, I'm turning my speakers down. Maybe it was
me.
I'm just wondering, this question 9 seems an odd one to ask Deloitte, whether it should be retained as – why would they – I mean, they may have suggestions on how to improve it in some way, but I don't know why they would, you know, suggest – why we would ask it's for – why would we ask this of Deloitte? Or are these questions being asked of various different people? So I see we did not ask Deloitte this question. Okay, so we're, these questions are – a mishmash. Okay. I didn't understand that. Sorry.
Okay. You know, Greg, as my previous comment indicated, I said this is more of a policy question. Maybe it should be reframed somewhat to start by asking Deloitte what percentage of what's in the clearinghouse falls in the trademark plus 50 category. They should know that because people would have had to say, hey, this isn't a trademark, but this was recovered in a UDRP or a court action, and therefore that's the basis for registration. So I would think Deloitte could have it, and it would be useful to this working group to know what percentage of the data in the clearinghouse is trademark plus 50 data rather than registered trademark data. So and I have no problem with asking for any suggestions on changes in trademark plus 50. Kathy. Go ahead, Kathy.
As an extension of that, Phil, I agree with the question. It's an extension. How many, when trademark plus 50 is used, on average, how many variations are registered, and how does the trademark clearinghouse use them? One question I have is, does it create an SMD file for every variation? I don't know. And is it used in Sunrise? Is it used in trademark claims? Is it used in the private protected marks list? Does it have its own does each variation have its own SMD file? You know, just the nuts and bolts, as you were laying out, you know, it would be great to have it from beginning to end of how trademark plus 50 is being used, since it was never I don't want to say it was a consensus policy, because none of these things were consensus policies, but it was never, trademark plus 50 was never part of the GNSO Council recommendations. So as a follow-up, but outside of Deloitte, you know, this is our time to review the policy. Do we have questions about it? Does it make sense? Should there be, you know, any modifications to this? Trademark plus 1,000, trademark plus 2. There may be different variations we should be considering. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Kathy. I hope staff is capturing some of that. I think the asking about the technical aspect, the SMD file, would be useful information from a technical background. I note in the chat room, Mary wrote that the question about TM plus 50 that Deloitte was asked was, quote, how many TMCH records include a TM plus 50 list, and how many on this list are on this list on average? How many registrations are made for entities on the trademark plus 50 list? So it's all, again, at the same, trying to get some detailed information of how much has been used. And I think aside from looking at trademark plus 50, the information can also be useful if the working group cares to evaluate whether rights holders should be free to offer other variations of their marks, as some of us have suggested. So before we get into that, it would be useful to know how many that were actually being used to infringe are being registered in the clearinghouse. Okay, moving on to question 10, should the clearinghouse matching rules be retained, modified, or expanded to include plurals, marks contained, or mark plus keyword, and or the common typos of a mark? That's exactly what I was just referring to, was that would be a further expansion beyond registered trademarks if we were to go that way. And I would think the working group would want to know how often TM plus 50 is used before we think about any further expansion of what might be permitted to be registered. And the notation, which I agree with, and then I'll call Mr. Levy, is that the working group decided that this was not an issue we needed to follow up with Deloitte. It's really something the working group needs to discuss further, and I would add that discussion would be better informed by hard data about the use of TM plus 50. Steve Levy, please go ahead. Steve, are you off mute? We're not hearing you.
Can everybody hear me?
Hear you now. Yes, go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, we hear you, Steve.
Hello?
Now, apparently, Steve is not hearing us.
A question about whether these... I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Well, go ahead with your comment, please.
Go ahead with your comment, please.
It's a very quick question about whether the matching rules would apply to Sunrise as well as notification. In other words, would a landowner be able to obtain Sunrise registrations for all these variations on their mark?
Yeah, I think if we're going to consider this, if we're going to consider the possibility of expanding what can be registered in the clearinghouse, we'd have to decide what that would generate in terms of protections and benefits. So I think that could be added to the question. It's still something for the working group to figure out, not really for Deloitte. I don't see what guidance they could give us beyond the hard data on trademark plus 50 usage. Other comments on that topic? And noting that we're 25 minutes into the call, and we're about halfway through this list. Kathy, please go ahead.
Sorry, coming off mute. Perhaps as an additional question to be asked for number 10, it would be a further exploration of why the exact matching rules were adopted. I know there's some issues in information in the staff paper of 2015, but also it seems like a question we should be asking. You know, do the exact matching rules serve their purpose and serve some of the balances of both trademark rights and registrant rights that we're trying to achieve as a working group?
Okay, thank you, Kathy. Greg? Greg's hand is down, and Kathy just spoke. And Mary, I see your hand up.
Yes, thanks, Phil. And Kathy, I'm not sure if this answers your question, but my recollection is that the matching rules in terms of what is and isn't an exact or identical match were always there from the start. And there was at least one explanatory memorandum that was published sometime during the course of the various applicant guidebook versions. There have also been throughout this process, starting from the IRT through the STI, through the various AGB versions, and indeed, as you see, even in the 2015 staff paper, that there are divided opinions amongst the community as to whether the matching rule should be expanded or changed or retained in some way. So hopefully that background is helpful for working group members.
Thank you, Mary, for another useful contribution. Moving on to question 11, which is, should the scope of the RPMs associated with the clearinghouse be limited to apply only to TLDs that are related to the categories of goods and services in which the dictionary terms within a trademark are protected? I guess that would mean that... if, for example, the exact label, the right of the dot label, would have to correspond in some way to the goods and services for which the trademark that the trademark covered for the RPMs to be generated. Deloitte, I'm going to go through the responses a little because it's a somewhat complex issue. Deloitte responded upon request of the community. The SMD file was designed in a way that the registry operator had all that necessary information to limit registration by goods and services, and that it's really a registry operator decision whether to do that. It's not a clearinghouse decision. They passed the information along. Apparently got responses from PIR, AFNIC, and Donuts that they haven't used this to limit registration by goods and services. The registry stakeholder group said they expect that one topic under consideration by this working group will be the inclusion of generic trademarks in the trademark clearinghouse. They think that continued inclusion of generic marks is appropriate and necessary to allow brand owners to protect their IP. However, they also believe that the RPMs need to strike a balance, given the volume of generic marks in the clearinghouse and the potential for legitimate registrations by third parties. They strongly oppose efforts by the working group to restrict registries from reserving or including on their premium list any names that are recorded in the TMCH. So they're a little concerned about what we might do. I'm not sure we're going to do that, but... And then there's a reference to the RPM staff paper, that staff paper noted that what's generic in one context may not be in another, particularly between jurisdictions. I'm not going to read all of that comment. The working group decision was that this was not an issue. Again, it's more of an issue that we need to hash out among ourselves than something that Deloitte can provide guidance with. It's really more of a policy question rather than an operational question. So any comments on that before we move on to the next, to Category 4? Okay, Category 3 is going once, twice. It's done. Category 4, we're on page 12. This is this category is costs and other fundamental features. Question 12, are there concerns about operational considerations due to the Trademark Clearinghouse database being provided by a single provider? If so, how may they be addressed? No response from Deloitte here. The 2015 RPM staff paper. And that related to costs for verification and other purposes. The registry stakeholder group said one critical decision was to require that all registries and mark holders integrate within a single trademark clearinghouse provider rather than allowing multiple providers. They think that could have provided a competitive marketplace that would have driven down costs associated with this, and perhaps better service. And the RPM working group, again, as in the prior question, this was not something that Deloitte needed to be inquired about. In fact, one would suspect there's an editorial comment that Deloitte might like being the sole provider. Who knows, but they have the market to themselves right now. This, again, is a issue for the working group to discuss further. And as I'm waiting to see if there's any comment on this question, I'm just going to take a sip of water for a moment. All right. I don't see any hands up on this one, so I guess there's agreement that this is another issue for the working group to get into on its own. Kathy, yes, go ahead.
I'm not sure about Deloitte, but I would think certainly IBM would be one of the providers we want to ask this question to. And it's not, because it's not just a competition question, this is a technical question. And if there are technical, I mean, we deal with single databases and competitive databases all the time, right, in our world. And we believe that GTLD should be singly run databases by one registry, not by multiple registries. We had that debate, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. But that other databases can be shared. So in this case, I would think this would be a question, particularly to IBM, about whether there are technical reasons why this function should belong to a single provider. And maybe we want to ask Deloitte as well. You know, we can expect what their answer might be, but there may be technical reasons for single databases here. There certainly were when we framed the questions initially and gave them to the GNSO Council. So anyway, I think this is one that might be interesting to ask them.
Okay, so Kathy, you're suggesting that contrary to the prior working group discussion, we should consider sending this to Deloitte and IBM as well, particularly with a particular focus on technical aspect considerations that might be a factor in answering the question. Is that correct?
Yes, that is the proposal. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Hope staff is noting that. I don't have a problem. It's just forwarding a question to those two parties. All right, the next question, question 13, editorial comment. This is a somewhat subjective question, being, are the costs and benefits of the clearinghouse reasonably proportionate amongst rights holders, registries, registrars, registrants, other members of the community, and ICANN? That's a lot of different slices of the pie to be proportionate. I'm not even sure what the right proportion for each should be, but it's late in my part of the world. Working group was that there's no follow-up needed with Deloitte, and this is something we need to discuss further. Unless there's contrary opinion, I would personally agree with that. This is a highly subjective question, and I don't know how Deloitte would be able to opine on it. They're real more useful for telling us how the clearinghouse is functioning as it is right now rather than whether its costs and benefits fall properly upon all those different parties. Mary, please chime in.
Thanks, Bill. Actually, I was going to go back one question, if I may, and I don't know that
sure.
This actually answers the question that Kathy asked, but again, for information for those who haven't been following the whole development process as closely, the idea for a centralized database was also there from the start, and in the STI recommendations that I think we're going to talk about in a little bit, one of the unanimous recommendations was for a single centralized database for registry use on the basis that the registry should only need to connect with one centralized database. So it could be from there that there was simply an assumption that with one centralized database, there would be one provider. Hopefully, again, that helps.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for the historic background, Mary. I guess we could consider whether clearly we need one total database for the global internet and for all the registry operators. I guess we could ask whether there could be different providers who providing the services based on that database, but the working group can get into that question as deeply as it wishes. We're up to Category 5 now on page 15 of 19, which is this is access and accessibility to the TMCH. And question 14, and there's a lot of colored ink in the corresponding boxes, is how accessible is the Trademark Clearinghouse database and RPM rights protection actions and defenses to individuals, organizations, and rights holders, as well as trademark agents in developing countries. So, and there's a footnote there, which I guess, I don't know where I find the, here we go, the Okay, here's the footnote. The word accessible is used in the sense of asking whether the clearinghouse, its existence, purpose, and how it's used is known to the types of stakeholders mentioned. So this is a question almost getting into the realm of education of users and potential users and others affected by it. Working group notes here was that the working group appreciates that the website is translated into several languages, and they noted Deloitte's response that it conducted sessions in Europe, Russia, China, Japan, Taiwan, Middle East, Europe, and the U.S. in various languages to provide education about the clearinghouse, which in turn would aid in accessibility, would be the logical link there. Deloitte's response is no information on corporate headquarters of registrants to use the trademark agents, as it's not a part of the clearinghouse scope. That outreach and education was not defined as being part of the clearinghouse scope. However, the necessity of education and outreach became very clear from the start, as there was limited awareness of the TLD program, and by consequently about the clearinghouse, and that the TMCH has invested a lot of time and effort into creating awareness through various avenues. And the working group discussion was that Deloitte's responses on corporate headquarters confirms that while it may know where the trademark agents are located, it doesn't know where the rights holders who instructed those agents are located. And the working group wondered if there's other sources of information other than Deloitte that can be approached for more input on this question. So on this whole concept of accessibility and location as in corporate headquarters, or I would imagine for possibly some other criteria of who's registering the trademarks, which can differ from the location of the agents. Anyone have any further thoughts on this or thoughts on who might have relevant information other than Deloitte? Okay, hearing none, I'm going to move on to the next question. And that question is, what concerns are being raised about the clearinghouse database being confidential? What are the reasons for having or keeping the trademark clearing database private? And should the clearinghouse database remain confidential or become open? And the working group, there's no information in the corresponding boxes other than that the working group had decided provisionally that no additional follow-up was needed with Deloitte on this, that this is an issue the working group needs to discuss further. So, yeah, we'll discuss it further, I'm sure. And this may be one of the more challenging and perhaps controversial questions we'll be dealing with. But in terms of a question, doesn't seem to be any need to send this question to Deloitte, in which case I imagine it will be dropped from the final question list. Further comment on that? Oh, good. We're next to the last page here. And, all right, no hands up. So moving on to the last category, that of balance. And question 16, which is the final question we'll be reviewing here, which is, does the scope of the clearinghouse and the protection mechanisms which flow from it reflect the appropriate balance between the rights of trademark holders and the rights of non-trademark registrants? I have to say this question 16 seems to raise I'm scrolling back to see which question it was. Yeah, it seems to be somewhat similar to question 13 about costs and benefits and whether they're proportionally distributed against various parties or the parties listed in that question are more numerous than this one, which just lists trademark holders and non-trademark registrants, or I guess registrants who might have trademarks, but that's not really relevant for this issue. They stand in the guise of registrants for this consideration. The registry stakeholder group said that the new TLD RPMs have been generally effective, well-balanced, and sufficient to provide protections to IP holders. With the advent of the new TLD program, that said, there are specific implementation details applicable to each of the major RPMs under study during Phase 1 that we believe should be taken into account by the working group. I don't know if the registries got into more detail about what these those specific implementation details are. If they did, we can address them. If not, we should probably ask them before we get into an internal discussion of this question. But the conclusion of the working group's provisional is no follow-up needed with Deloitte, that this is another of these subjective questions and a policy-related question that we need to grapple with, and I would agree with that. Is there any comment on that final question about appropriate balance of the protections before we close out this review of the questions? And I would think that between this review and prior discussion in the working group that we pretty well wrapped up discussion of these questions and are close to being ready to send them out, the ones that are going to be sent out. Greg, please go ahead. Not hearing you yet, Greg.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
In the scope of this last question, we seem to be asking not only about the TMCH, but all the protection mechanisms which flow from it. So that's basically, you know, that's quite a bit of other things beyond the TMCH itself. So it seems like the protection mechanisms should be should not be part of the scope of this question process. Thanks.
Okay, I think that's a useful suggestion. Yeah, and to the extent that these are questions supposed to be focused on the clearinghouse, that does go beyond that. We can certainly raise the scope of the Sunrise registrations and claims notice when we get to those protections that flow from the clearinghouse. But I'd agree that part of this question goes beyond our immediate focus. I briefly saw a hand up, but it's gone now. I'm just checking the chat room to see if there's anything further that needs to be discussed before we move on from this list of questions. Kathy, go ahead.
Thanks, Phil. I think I may be reflecting something you already said, but I don't see it in the notes. So just so that it's captured, it looks like this last question should be edited the way you and Greg were talking about, but also be added as we get to the rights protection mechanisms that are using the Trademark Clearinghouse database. So kind of a note that we put 16 in its more expanded version into, you know, after we look at the Sunrise Sunrise period and trademark claims notices.
Okay. And frankly, while one question refers to proportionality and another one to balance, I think we probably might want to consider whether questions 13 and 16 can be combined in some way. They seem to be somewhat repetitive, and I already noted that. So we're now done with this review of the questions, and it's we have 13 minutes before the top of the hour. So I think we can not really get into the substance of item 3 in our agenda, but I think maybe for about 10 minutes we can lay the groundwork for discussion of this question and our call next week which will be our final call before we meet in Copenhagen. It's hard to believe Copenhagen's coming up that quickly, but it is. I know that I'll be leaving for Copenhagen 2 weeks from tomorrow, and for me, tomorrow starts in 13 minutes. So do we have some anything to put up on the screen on question three? We're on item agenda item three, which is whether the clearinghouse, as it operates at this moment, fulfills the requirements of the applicant guidebook, which means we're going to be getting into the actual language of the guidebook and discussing whether the operation of the clearinghouse is filling that whole space or is too narrow or has gone beyond what's set forth in the guidebook. So, Mary, yeah, you've got your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Phil. And on this point, as you and Kathy know, during the coordinating call earlier today, the chairs had asked staff to start to prepare a list of the source documentation for, you know, the scope of the clearinghouse, bearing in mind that there were different versions of the applicant guidebook, there was the work of the SDI, and there was some subsequent community work following the launch of the new GTLD program round. What we have at the moment, and we have not had the ability to circulate this to the working group or the chairs as we've been working on it this evening, we have a few documents that we can show if you like. One is the STI report with the recommendations. Another is the final version of the TMCH as it appears in the last version of the applicant guidebook. And a third is a table that is the staff attempt at compiling the source documents in a chronological order of sorts. So I can put any or all of these
up. Okay, so we've got the actual language of the trademark clearinghouse. We've got a preliminary list, kind of a history of how this became to be developed. And what was the first item again? Mary?
The STI recommendations.
Okay. Well, the STI recommendations were the basis, though not the entire basis, for the final language in the clearinghouse and the guidebook. I'm going to take Chair's prerogative for this call and suggest we put up item two for us to look at, which is the language in the guidebook on the clearinghouse, which is based in substantial part, but not completely, on those STI recommendations. And so we can look at this and then just to get an idea of what the basis is for the clearinghouse. And then I think on our next call would be more appropriate to get into some of the detailed history of how this June 4th, 2012 document came to be. So let's take a quick look at this. I think everyone has scroll control. It's a nine-page document. And this is the first time the chair, tonight's chair, is seeing this document. So I'm going to take just a moment to survey it before starting a discussion of it. Okay, and I do see just by beginning this review that this is a highly detailed blueprint for the purpose and functioning of the clearinghouse. I'm not sure how much progress we could make with 8 minutes left in this call in reviewing any of this. So I'm going to suggest. I see your hand up, Mary. I'll call on you in a moment. I'm going to suggest that rather than trying to wade through this now with 8 minutes left in this call, that we ask staff to distribute the documents, the STI recommendations, which is a historic document, this provision of the applicant guidebook, which again is a historic document, and and the that I think staff can go ahead and distribute these to the entire working group mailing list, so everyone has an opportunity to look at this in detail before our call next week. And the third document, which is the history and is a document that staff is putting together right now, I would say send out these two documents right after this call. And that final document, when staff feels it's ready later this week for the co-chairs to review it, let us take a look at it before we send it out to the working group. But we have the aim of having all three background documents in the hand of working group members before our final pre-Copenhagen call 1 week from today. Does that seem like an acceptable way? I would hope so, because I don't see a reason to start wading into this detail with now just 7 minutes left in the call. I see John McElwain in the chat room said, what are we doing to 16 questions we just went over? I think, John, we're pretty much wrapped up on those, and that the next step would be for the ones that we've decided should go to Deloitte, and in one case there was a suggestion from Kathy also to IBM that we get those out to them as soon as possible. There's no reason to delay any further. Would staff, yeah, Mary? I see your hand, and maybe you want to respond to what I just said.
Thanks, Phil. Actually, I want to agree and to follow up. As you and Kathy know, Deloitte is likely to be present in Copenhagen, and we have asked if they can be available for, you know, at least some of the time that our working group will be meeting. So if we can get these questions out to them sooner rather than later, that can form at least part of the basis of the discussion between us and Deloitte, hopefully in Copenhagen. So the staff hope is to get these questions compiled, and we did have a couple of requests out to the mailing list that if anyone has any additional suggestions, they should send those to the mailing list as soon as possible to be included in the compilation. At the moment, my hope is to get the compilation done by Monday of next week at the latest so that we can get them out to Deloitte with a reasonable amount of advance notice.
Yeah, thank you, Mary, and I agree. And I believe, recollecting what we went over on the co-chairs call earlier today, that meeting with Deloitte would be the first hour of our three-hour face-to-face meeting of the working group, which I believe takes place on the first full day of the meeting on the Saturday. Is that correct?
Yes, Bill, that's correct. The
right.
3-hour face-to-face for the working group will be on Saturday, the 11th of March, sometime during the morning. And a few days later, we will have the regular open working group session of the community. I believe that will be on the Wednesday, the 15th.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, we definitely want to get those questions out no later than next Monday, so Deloitte has, I guess, a little less than 2 weeks to consider them. Maxim, I see your hand up.
Maxim Alzoba, for the record. Would we have someone from IBM, I mean the personal devoted to PMCH, during the session, because they might, it will help in situations where Deloitte says, oh, we don't know it, you need to ask IBM. Thanks.
Yeah, well, I see in the Mary note in the chat room that IBM may not be in Copenhagen. Let's have staff check that out, whether they'll have a presence there. All right, so that about wraps up this call. Our next steps are, when is our next call? What's the time on that? I believe it's next Wednesday, Mary, and I think it's at 1700 UTC. Is that correct?
Hi, Phil. It's Mary. You are correct.
Okay.
Wednesday, March 1st at 1700 UTC.
Okay. So that'll be our next call. We'll get into this actual text of the applicant guidebook on the clearinghouse and some of the historic background. And the other thing that we'd like, since the time we're meeting right now, the 0400 time was done for the benefit of APAC members, and I'm delighted to note that our vice chair from Tasmania, that this time worked out for her and was able to join us tonight. We'd like to solicit their input, and it can be by email back to the co-chairs and staff or to the full working group, whatever, as to whether the way we did it today, having the call early Wednesday morning, which is Tuesday night in the Western Hemisphere, works for them, or whether it would be preferable to have it early Thursday morning, and which is late Wednesday in the Western Hemisphere. And I guess we should ask all of our members thinking about it to opine on that, because a change from scheduling early Wednesday morning or early Thursday morning would affect members all over the world. Folks in the Western Hemisphere might have a different impact for them than others. But let's see. We do want to make sure that this time works for our APAC members. Jeff Newman, at 1 minute to the hour, go ahead. Jeff, not hearing you.
Says I'm on, so can no one hear me?
All right, now we can hear you.
Okay, sorry about that. So I just wondered if we could, as soon as possible, return to our timeline, our project plan, figure out where we are and where we're going. I just feel like we've been kind of in limbo for the past bunch of weeks, just reviewing these questionnaire answers, and no path going forward as to what we're going to do with this data and how we're going to get back on our timeline. So if we could address that, thank you.
Okay, Jeff. Yeah, I think that's a valid concern. We should check against our timeline, and maybe I would think that would be something we should address, since we're going to be face-to-face in just a few weeks in Copenhagen. That would be a good venue to, when we're all together in the same room, to look at the timeline and see if we're adhering to schedule or slipping behind, and if we're slipping behind, what we can do to condense the process to keep it comprehensive and yet get back on track if we're off track. So I'm going to suggest we take that approach, but the co-chairs can further discuss that with staff in advance of our next call. And with that, I'm going to thank everyone for joining this call. I'm glad we wrapped up on the questions and have started to lay the groundwork for the comparison of the guidebook provisions on the clearinghouse to its actual operation, and we'll get into that next week with the benefit of documents that staff will be distributing to all members between now and the next call. Thank you all very much, and good morning, good afternoon, or good night, whatever it is for you. It's good night for me. Bye, all.
Thank you. Once again, this meeting has been adjourned. Operator Christine, if you can please stop all recordings. To everyone else, please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.